This microphone is very unforgiving. It picks up every little clunk from here. So when you're listening, you'll know, oh, that's where Lynette veiled herself. Okay, so let's just take a moment and just come to our breath, come into our body. Come into this room, this moment. With all of the phenomena that accompanies this, you know, being here, the expectations, the disappointments, the joy, the sorrow, the wisdom, the foolishness, all of it. Opening the heart in such a way that it can contain everything. Love and loss, life and death, pain and sorrow, warmth and cold. Holding all of it without any preference. Without any pushing away, clinging to confusion. Just because. And just opening up, opening your eyes, opening your mind, opening your heart, taking in everything around you. We talked, this week about about all kinds of goodies, but mainly about just this opening, right? Opening up to what's already here. My question to myself often is, what might happen if I let go of wanting what's here to be gone? Now, if it's an unpleasant experience, what might happen if I let go of wanting this unpleasant experience to be gone? The tricky part in that is that the letting go is not about tossing it away. I gotta let go of this. Send it down to, you know, the recycle bin. Send it off to the Sally Ann. I gotta let go of this. It's not that motion, that throwing away motion. When we're clutched around something, it's about relaxing that grip. Letting go and opening the hand, and then being curious, what's here? What's this thing that's so attached to me in the palm of my hand? And can I poke at it a little bit? Can I roll it around? Can I see, really see what's here? Not what I wish was here, you know. What I wish was here. A whole lot of things that don't even fit in this hand. But just being curious with this discomfort that's here, even with this joy that's here, with any of it, can I just open that hand release it, and then see what it is. Because if I've got it in this grip, I can't see it, I can't touch it, not in any real way. Right? So everything we've talked about over this day is this sense of, you know, this wanting to be good that we've got a tight grip around, right? I want to be good. I have to be good. I don't have a choice. It's this grip that we have around this identity. This is who I am. I am the one who rescues people. I am the one who is always available. I am the one who can overlook, you know, a ton of things that just aren't working and force myself to try to make them work. I'm the one who doesn't want to be nasty. I'm the one who doesn't want to have to confront. I'm the one who doesn't want to be seen as the angry person. I'm the one who. All of these identities that we're gripping onto. What might happen if I let go of wanting any one of these things to be my legacy? Or to not be my legacy if they happen to be negative things. Right? So really, that's what we've been asking you to do over this day, and hopefully into tomorrow, and hopefully into the day after, is to constantly be curious, to open your hand that's gripping around something and go, what is this? Really, what is this? No, really, 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 what is this? As many reallys as it takes. Right. And why is it identifying? Why is it the only thing that identifies me in this moment? Can I open up to all the other things that are equal identifiers of me? Some of which no longer even exist. So I really invite you, well, Frank in Abstensia and I really invite you. I can't believe he's listening to me. I said you're going upstairs and resting, and he said, okay. I now have a new identity. I am the one who is listened to. I'm clinging to that identity, at least for the next 2 months, right? Yeah. Really. Yeah. So, what might happen if I let go of this identity that I'm holding on to right now, in this moment? That's the secret to the universe, really. I've got nothing else for you. But it's that gentle act of opening that's the letting go. And you can't throw it away because it's stuck to you, right? You know, it's kind of like toffee. You can't get rid of it, right? But you open your hand. This identity arises, it takes life, and then it dissolves. It's gone. That's my experience. You need to play with your identity and see what happens. So all of these selves, and I want to capture something that Frank has said, which is, I think, really important. You know, he talks about all these different selves that emerge based on causes and conditions, which I had also talked about in the morning. I don't want you to feel like, you know, there are this multiplicities of people who live your life for you. It's really not what non-self means. There is a navigational self, right? So Sina Feldman calls it a navigational self. And that navigational self is the thing that allows you to know that you don't get to drive the Mercedes home because it's not your car. Yours is the other car. It's the one that allows you to know which address to go to when you get home. It's the one that remembers your postal code. Right? The one that's really happy that you got your paycheck. Right? So there is this navigational self that's very important. Otherwise, we'd all be a little bit of a mess. Right? So it's not that there is this free-floating, you know, non-lucid kind of state that we live in, but rather these identities that we grab a hold of and make into something. That's the one that's constantly fluid. I was pointing out to him over dinner, we were talking about, you know, what themes to pick up on. And I said, you know, that exercise kind of threw me about, you know, connecting with the self I am right now and asking, what do I need? And then asking, what does the self really need? And I said, well, by the time I had answered, what did this self need, the self had changed. So the second one of what did the self really need didn't make any sense to me because that self was no longer there. But then I didn't know, should I really go back up to that previous self, which was no longer there? Or should I actually try to find another self? And he kind of looked at me and he said, could I have more cobbler, please? And lots of ice cream. And I went, no, this is really important. I want to understand that exercise. So that's an example of being a little silly and taking it too far. But I really did have that little bit of conundrum as I sat there going, but which self were we talking about? I hope you find some level of liberation, some level of freedom in terms of recognizing that you're not fixed as in you are not one unitary thing. You're not fixable either, by the way, but that's a whole different retreat. But we're not fixed. We're not just this one. Thank goodness. Can you imagine if you were still the person you were at 3? Or for some of us at 53? Yeah. So there's a joy in impermanence, right? There's a joy in impermanence that things change. There's a joy in not having a fixed self because I get to do it over again. I get a do-over. I get to try again. I get to cultivate a different me. Right? And suffering, well, you know what that is. It's not pain plus resistance. It's pain times resistance. It's exponential. Right? But it also means it's in your control. The degree of that resistance is in your control. So in all of this, we haven't talked about mindfulness at all, right? Wrong. Mindfulness is about remembering. The translation of mindfulness of the traditional word sati is to remember. To recall. And what are we recalling? We're recalling the consequences of all the choices that we've made without attention and intention. Because that's how we learn. In my group, and that's a non-self my group, we talked about the connection between intention and outcome. If your intention is to live a healthy life and your outcome is that, you know, you're consuming vast amounts of poutine and, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken and you know you have gallbladder problems, and maybe your intent, that something that's linking your intention to your outcome is a little bit wonky. So it's always about, not just about intention, attention, and attitude, it's about intention and outcome. I can be really well intentioned, but if my outcome isn't consistent with my intention, I've got to change something in between. But in order to understand outcome, I have to practice all the aspects of mindfulness so that I have mental clarity. I'm not fooling myself, right? I'm not looking at the Kentucky Fried Chicken and the, you know, the poutine and going, but it's okay, it's really good veggies. It's good protein. I'm not fooling myself. I can see the delusional process I'm going through that's giving me this negative outcome that's not consistent with my intention. In order to know, to make that outcome consistent, I have to turn to a set of guidelines, and for us we offer the five skillful habits. I have to develop a set of patterns that allow for congruence, a match between my intention and my outcome. If I value good health, then those behaviors in the five skillful habits, things like mindful consumption, respectful mortality, all of that, have to have behaviors. Those are still concepts. They have to have behaviors that produce this outcome that's actually consistent with good health. So the five skillful habits are not about, you know, they're not commandments. They're not about punishing us or making us feel guilty. It's about a really clear program evaluation. Is this treatment actually giving us the results that we want? I'm treating myself with different dosages of skillful habits. Is it producing the outcome I want? And if it's not, we've got to go back and reconsider what the intention is. Is the intention even reasonable? What are the behaviors? And what's going to give me the outcome? And the nice thing about impermanence is that if it's not working now, you can change it and do it again. Because you're not the same person doing it again. You've now got a little bit more wisdom. Right. The nice thing about non-self or having a fluid self is that I'm not wedded or welded to being the person who has to be successful on the first shot. And the great thing about suffering is that as long as I drop my resistance, I can meet the challenge of having to do something over again. Right. So can you see how all of that comes together? Right. It comes together as this wonderful little matrix, a beautiful map that says, where do I want to go? How do I get there? What's the best route? And kind of like the labyrinth, if the route is taking me away from the center for too long, I can self-correct. So there's nothing that can't be done over. There's nothing that can't be replayed. Because the fundamental relationship is you with what you're doing, and you are constantly changing. Which means what you're doing is constantly going to be an object of curiosity. It's always going to be new. Except for counting calories, that's never new for me. But it's not giving me the outcome, so I don't have to do it. I have to find another healthy way of doing, you know, dealing with all issues that I need to deal with. Right? So that's where we've come from and gotten to. I want to say a quick word. I've got to cut a few more minutes. So that's the practice. The practice is one of constantly clarifying all these resistances that we have. And sometimes those resistances can feel like they're protecting us against a life or death situation. and really they're not. Because trust me, if it really was a life or death situation, you wouldn't be sitting around meditating. Mm-hmm. You'd be out of here. So, what's really important though in all of this, and I think this is an issue that we keep coming up against over and over again as human beings, that in the 20th century there's become this incredible commitment to self-improvement. It's a wonderful industry, you know. I'm completely caught up in it. Like, I've subscribed to Gaia, I subscribe to, you know, Psychology Today, I've got everything except Oprah on my iPad, you know. It's all about self-improvement. And you have to ask, what's wrong with you that you feel you need to be improved? So, you know, we go to, of course, if I start with the object, with the idea that, you know, there is something wrong with me and I need to improve, then of course I'm a complete victim to all of this industry. The question is, does mindfulness have anything to do with self-improvement? And now that you know that there is no self, what answer do you give? If you're constantly changing anyway, what's there to improve? But the risk is that we use all of these, and as I said in the opening talk, you know, we use all of these approaches, these practices, the concentration practice, the wisdom practice, you know, the ethics practice, we use all of these as ways of making us different from who we are, not better. Because here's the challenge, to live an ethical life is an incredibly difficult thing to do. It's so much easier to say, I'm just going to go to this retreat, you know, and I'll listen about the five skillful habits, or I'll go to this Buddhist retreat, and I'll listen about the precepts, and then they get to the part where you don't get to drink alcohol anymore for the rest of your life, and you go, maybe I'll go find another retreat, right? And I remember I was in Thich Nhat Hanh's community for a very long time, and, you know, absolutely, I mean, I was already vegetarian, so I absolutely fell in love with vegetarianism, and all of this became badges, right? So, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh's community, I loved my practice, loved my teacher, all of it was fantastic. I don't know that I grew in it, I think I was still in the clingy stage, and then life got the better of me. I wasn't going as often, and I wasn't going to retreats as often, and I discovered that they'd become strictly vegan. And so I went and found another Zen tradition, where they cooked really, really good vegetarian food, right? So after a while, I noticed I was only picking the Zen centers that had a really good reputation for good food. You know, that clinging self is always there, right? But it's that, you know, that sense of, oh, this isn't good enough, I've got to move on, right? And that's always my concern, is that we can use meditation to relax, to be stress-free. And that's wonderful. I won't take that away from anybody. If that's a starting point, that's great, but it's only a starting point. I mean, why would I take something away that makes everybody feel relaxed and chilled out, right? I wouldn't take that away. But it's a side effect. If you're going to have a side effect from any kind of treatment, relaxation and being de-stressed is a wonderful side effect to have, right? So keep doing it and enjoy the side effects. As you found out today, this process of being with yourself, it's not always a pleasant process. The present moment is not always a pleasant moment. That's where intention, attention, and attitude come in. that's where the real practice begins. Now I know, you know, some of you are going to pop in your cars tomorrow and that won't be the part you remember. You'll remember, you know, what beautiful weather we had. All those talks, they were really great. I don't know what they said, I can't remember, but they were really great. And the people were so wonderful and the place was so lovely and I feel so relaxed. I should do this again next year. That will be what you'll remember. And that's okay. At some point in the middle of the night in your dreams will sneak up on you and remind you what really happened here. All the insights that you had. So I really encourage you to recognize that mindfulness is not only about feeling good. It's great if that happens. But it's also about feeling everything. It's about opening ourselves up to everything that presents itself to us. It's about noticing how I push away the unpleasant stuff, and who the heck wouldn't? But noticing how I do that and go, oh, whoa, wait a minute. Is this a put it on the shelf thing, or am I really resisting? Or is this legitimately something like I just don't really want to go near, I'm not ready for? Right? So it's not about drowning in the unpleasant stuff, but about making a decision with a clear mind. And those of you who have been coming, you know, this is our sixth year, which is pretty amazing. For those of you who have been coming regularly, you know this path. It's challenging. Sometimes it's painful. The world doesn't stop just because you're not feeling good. Right? And that's where the practice comes in. It's about constantly turning towards what's happening. Because here's the reality of physiology. If I suppress and shut down all of the unpleasant experiences how I experience the unpleasant experiences, I also shut down my capacity to experience joy, happiness, and all the other pleasant stuff. It's an all or nothing switch. Physiologically, there's no difference. You turn it off, it's off. And then what happens, you turn it on a little bit, is not the suppressed joy and happiness that comes surging to the fore, it's all the other stuff. Because that's really powerful. Right? So if in every moment, to keep in my window of tolerance, if in every moment I can turn towards and drop back down into that zone, that optimal zone, I have more of an opportunity to notice, as Frank said this afternoon, to notice the good stuff, the nourishing stuff, the supporting stuff. But if I'm constantly using my parasympathetic system to shut everything down, you know, vagal system's messed up anyway because I'm so stressed. If the vagal system is offline, there's no way of soothing. The parasympathetic is not really able to meet with the, you know, the upsurge of the sympathetic nervous system. It's too powerful. I can't bring it down. So suppression doesn't work. But turning towards it does. Developing more and more emotional tolerance, more and more distress tolerance, more and more emotional regulation allows us to be with what's coming. And that is the definition of compassion. Compassion is our capacity to be with what's happening right now. And self-compassion is the capacity to be with what's happening with me right now. So that, in 19 minutes, is what you've gone through over the last 24 hours. So I really encourage you to keep practicing. We'll talk again tomorrow morning, but tomorrow morning is more about you and not about us. but really encourage you to practice, as they say in Buddhism, to practice like your hair is on fire. To practice because there's no other choice. And for those of you who've been here listening to us yammer on for 6 years, thank you. You're only encouraging us, so, you know. Okay, so let's do a bit more practice on compassion.